put out a fire.
Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, as the leaders of Western civilization cheer the obliteration of the captive population of Gaza, no one need be reminded we live in dark and dangerous times. But even the most jaded are ill-prepared for the revelations of the abysmal depth and gaping width of depravity afforded through the aegis of the COVID-19 response. T.J. Coles is director of the Plymouth Institute for Peace Research and the author of numerous books, including The War on You, Manufacturing Terrorism, Capitalism and Coronavirus, How Institutionalized Greed Turned a Crisis into a Catastrophe, Biofascism, the Tech Pharma Complex, and the End of Democracy, and many others. His latest is the Pfizer Papers, the Secret Documents Exposing Big Pharma's COVID Vaccine Crimes. It's an investigation into what is certainly the greatest crime of this young century, and perhaps the greatest in all of history. Welcome back to the program, Tim.
Hello, thanks for inviting me.
Well, it's my pleasure, of course. Now, Tim, I didn't have to read further than the first sentence of the introduction of your book to appreciate its vital necessity, in that you write of the Daguerre family of Ohio, paid by Pfizer to enroll their children in COVID vaccine trials. What happened next, Tim?
Well, Maddie Daguerre was 12 years old, and she was enrolled in this trial in Cincinnati. And she had the first injection, which I believe she had kind of the expected fatigue, etc. But with the second injection, that was absolutely catastrophic. After that, she was paralyzed. She's, I believe, now confined to a wheelchair. She had to be fed through a tube, all sorts of terrible things, which under normal circumstances, any clinical trial of a new product would have been stopped immediately. But not only was it not stopped, it was covered up. The family went to the head of the trial, I believe a Dr. Frank. And he was, they suggested that it be reported to VAERS, the Adverse Events Reporting System in the US. And he said, no, we don't do that. This is what the family's claiming, and emails which suggest that. So that shows that the VAERS system is not an accurate representation of the injuries and deaths that have likely resulted from this novel product. And in fact, in the released Pfizer papers, which were not meant for public view, and we can get on to that, they do actually confirm that in the event of injury or death, the investigator, the doctor, should inform the company in the first instance. Well, you should actually inform a health authority and some independent doctors. Informing the company is obviously a recipe for a cover-up. So the doctor in this case, if I'm not mistaken, advised them to do that. Other health authorities dismissed Maddie's injury as being the result of an unrelated neurological condition. So there has been, to date, no justice for this terrible situation, this girl's life likely ruined. And of course, it was even covered up, because the goal was to promote this new injectable product, not to actually follow legitimate science, which is to give people a genuine cost-benefit ratio and to allow informed consent. And so Dr. Frank, in fact, wrote or issued a statement about how pleased he was about the progress of his team at the vaccine center, not mentioning this poor girl. And if you go onto the Pfizer website and type the name of the family in, nothing comes up. Now, of course, in our day and age, fake news is just everywhere. It's in the state corporate propaganda system, obviously, but it's also in the alternative media. People are not interested necessarily in truth unto itself. They're interested in confirming their biases or in selectively finding things for a political agenda. So to get to the best approximation of the truth, was this story real? Did it happen? Or is it just some invention on social, on alternative media? I did look at the Food and Drug Administration documents, which have published the Gary family emails. And I have looked at a statement, a letter released by their legal team. So this case is genuine. And it's a really appalling indictment of how the U.S. medical regime, in this case, the Food and Drug Administration, and local level research centers can just cover up a very serious adverse event.
Well, Tim, do we know about the Daguerre family? Are they, I mean, I know Ohio is in the middle of America's so-called Rust Belt. It's a difficult place to live. The economy has been bad for a long time. Was their participation paid because they were impoverished, or did they genuinely believe that they were helping science and putting forward? I mean, it must take a lot of inducement to put one's children forward for medical experiments.
I did ask to interview the family, but I did not get a reply. In public statements, they have said that their children, particularly Maddie, wanted to volunteer for the scheme to help the general public. But that raises a whole issue about whether children can consent and volunteer to such things. But putting that particular family aside and onto the general point, I did file my own FOIA request with the Food and Drug Administration to ask about how people, particularly children, are compensated for participation in these trials, and they refused to give any information. I would have pursued the FOIA request, but I lost the FOIA number because my university cancelled me and I couldn't get back into my emails, but that's another story. But I did actually write to Pfizer, and they were much more helpful, to my surprise. They did send me a fact sheet in which they said that parents are financially compensated and or children given age-appropriate gifts. So I thought, this is a terrible situation of basically bribery, as you say, to induce people who may come from poor socioeconomic backgrounds. And that was part of my FOIA request, to look at the kind of backgrounds. Are these people from ethnic minorities and thus likely to be more impoverished? Are they poor white people? What's the background? Pfizer wouldn't go into detail about that specifically. And the FDA, as I say, they initially refused to honor the FOIA, and I would have pursued it, but couldn't because of what happened to me at my university. So for sure, there are financial incentives for these things. And anything like this should, of course, include all of the necessary information and facts, so that people going forward and putting their children forward should have informed consent. And what we found, I mean, it's pretty obvious anyway, but the Pfizer papers confirm this, is in case after case, there's been cover-up and minimization and the distorting of data.
Well, it's certainly been made difficult to report on COVID generally. For reporters, now you mentioned that you were canceled out of your university and out of the research position you held there. I too have experienced cancellation on my university radio program for doing stories on COVID origins, I think, when I was canceled from my program, they wouldn't, it was very Kafkaesque. They wouldn't provide the actual crime I had committed. The charges against me were so generalized, I couldn't possibly defend myself. And then the very mechanisms already in place for these kinds of situations were denied to me. Now, I've read some, at least, of your article at Counterpunch from earlier this year. Pentagon-funded Plymouth University cancels anti-war academic reflections on how the U.S. empire conquered higher education. The cancellation I suffered, I always assumed, was a combination of COVID and my reporting on the Ukraine war, which was both, as you might expect, were against the grain. Do you think that it was your involvement in COVID research or in anti-war research that resulted in your ouster from Plymouth?
This is a mystery, and like you, there was no specific allegations made. I was working off campus, and my funding for my research, which was about blindness and visual impairment, it had nothing to do with politics. That's what I do in my spare time. That came from a third party, and the university was acting as a host for my postdoctoral work. So it was, I was in a very vulnerable position, and it was very easy for them to get rid of me. And I found myself last October locked out of my account, and nobody from IT staff would tell me what was happening. It's only because the original sponsor of my email account happened to give me the emails that other staff had been writing about me, that I got a clue as to what was happening. I still don't know the identity of the original complainant, but I suspect I know who it is. Someone I'd never heard of and never met, but this person is copied into the emails for no apparent reason. And I learned from other FOIA requests that he's getting British government money to counter what they call disinformation and quote-unquote populism. As if I'm kind of lumped into the right wing, which I'm absolutely not, quite far from it. This guy wrote to my old PhD examiner, who's in a completely different department called Jane Grant, and she said that this guy he's writing conspiracy theories, which don't put the university in a good light, but they never said what they were. And they said it's maybe it's time to terminate his contract. And actually, she, on her Twitter account, she's retweeting pro-union stuff. So it's good to support trade unions, but not to actually do it in practice. It's, stab your colleagues in the back. So the whole university department's piled in on me and wouldn't explain what was happening. I had no right of reply, no specific allegations made. And actually, I had to write to the vice chancellor of the university. And unfortunately, the independent investigator, although he agreed they should not have cancelled me in the way they did, the consensus was basically that I should go.
Well, I know in my case, I'm sort of a gnarly personality, and I didn't find many allies. You sound like a reasonable person. Do you think the reason that nobody stands up and defends, or people that profess sympathies for unions and other things that you would agree with as well, don't come forward just because they're terrified to lose their positions?
I think it depends entirely on the specific situation. But what we're finding today, absolutely, is that the whole culture has basically been militarized. The Pentagon is committed to what it calls full-spectrum dominance of land, sea, air, space, and information. And they have control over the physical infrastructure through which information travels, which is the internet. And we've seen time and time again, whenever any website or any independent commentator is writing or saying anything that does not align with this full spectrum dominance doctrine, the Pentagon will shut them down.
Well, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with TJ Coles. TJ is director of the Plymouth Institute for Peace Research and author of numerous books, including The War on You, Manufacturing Terrorism, Capitalism and Coronavirus, and Biofascism, the Tech Pharma Complex, and the End of Democracy, to name a few. His latest is the Pfizer Papers, the secret documents exposing Big Pharma's COVID vaccine war crimes. Tim, now, these papers that you base your book on, they wouldn't even have been available. Pfizer had attempted to put a 55 or 75-year embargo on them, as I recall. But that was turned around by a judge in Texas named Mark Pittman, who ordered the release of the Pfizer-BioNTech papers. How did you come to follow this trail?
I really felt that this experimental mRNA injection was rolled out far too quickly to be safe. I mean, that's just common sense. And whether or not you wish to take it, that's entirely your decision. And there are precedents for that, the Nuremberg Code. And, you know, it used to be a left-wing principle. If you look at somebody like Jeremy Corbyn, who is the head of, or was the head of the Labour Party in Britain, and really scared the establishment because he was genuinely a left progressive. His position was that nobody should be coerced to take an experimental product. And what we found is that with the pretty much the entire globe under lockdown, the populations of the world were being economically coerced into taking this injection. And not only that, but by a company, I mean, there are a couple producing the mRNA, but Pfizer in particular has been repeatedly fined and castigated, even by the U.S. Department of Justice, for being a criminal organization. So all of these facts should be presented to anybody who wanted to take this injection and should not have been coerced into doing it. So I was already extremely skeptical of the safety and efficacy. And I looked when I learned that this medical association, one of the top people involved is Peter Doshi, who's one of the editors at the British Medical Journal, one of the very few respected mainstream medical professionals to actually be skeptical about this. He and his team filed a FOIA with the FDA, and as you said, they weren't going to release them, but the judge, Mark Pittman in Texas, ordered that they be released. I thought this is, you know, it's a golden opportunity to learn at least some of the truth about what's happened without any spin, just from the company's own reports.
And now, and what form did the papers take? I mean, it must be thousands upon thousands of pages.
Well, as the old saying goes, I've read them so you don't have to. But it's a lot of it's just impenetrable data from like the age and so on of the participants. Others are obscured because of so-called patient confidentiality. Mm-hmm. Some papers are just marketing information, but a lot of it's very clear and very concise participant information matched with the trial methods, matched with the vaccine doses, matched with follow-ups, etc. So it's a lot. If you're doing raw research, as I did, it's a lot to go through to find what's usable information or what's not relevant, and to analyze it and compile it into a readable way.
Well, and one of the conclusions in the chat, and I haven't read your book yet, but the one of your chapter headings is mRNA's military, the provenance, that's not the title of, that's what I titled it, but mRNA's military provenance. I hadn't heard that before. Can you explain briefly, Tim, what mRNA is? I mean, I'm sure most people have an idea now, and what the military and the Pentagon have to do with its development.
Sure. It's basically a code that, depending on how it's programmed, can replicate a certain feature. So in the case of SARS-CoV-2, they want to replicate the spike protein. But you could apply that to other things for biowarfare. Depends on what the virologist wants to do. And what I learned from looking at military technical papers, which are all in the public domain, none of this, you know, the Pfizer papers are now because of this court ruling, but the military documents are all open source, the ones I quote. They were talking about that Fort Detrick, which is the famous U.S. biowarfare laboratory, how they would be using mRNA to create a certain modification of viruses. And the research 20, 25 years ago was pretty rudimentary. But when you look at the chronology of who was researching it and for what purpose, it becomes pretty obvious that this was this originated in the military. And Moderna, which of course has mRNA in its title, the Moderna Corporation, I can't remember the exact history, but that was basically created by the U.S. government, that company. It's one of those, another example of the so-called capitalism, where there's innovation and competition, which is actually doesn't exist. It's just state-funded monopolies where high-tech ventures are funded by the taxpayer and then handed over to private monopolies.
Yeah. Well, you write in the conclusion to your book, it's billed as a warning for our collective mRNA future. What are your fears about where this technology is leading all of us?
Well, as I write in the book, what's happened has been a massive cover-up. And it's for sure, some of it is a conspiracy just not to tell the truth. But a lot of it is just the culture, that people are just enculturated to accept this mRNA so-called vaccine as being safe and effective. And slowly, slowly in the medical literature, peer-reviewed medical literature, we see that the components of this technology, the nanoparticles, are accumulating in some people in their organs. And in other people, it's been causing myocarditis. So people, this means that billions of people have received this, and potentially millions have been poisoned. Now, to what extent depends on the individual, your susceptibility. So if this technology is normalized and fast-tracked as being safe and effective, it could end up being used very broadly in all sorts of medicines without the kind of safety checks that would have been imposed in the past. And when you also look at the concentrations of funding of the kind of people that are promoting this, it really portends a future, a potential future of sickness.
Well, in my country, Canada, our prime minister was doing adverts for Pfizer and Moderna injections. They fast-tracked in lockstep with the U.S., as is often the case here, the initial vaccines, and now the new version for this year have apparently, too, just been fast-tracked with very little, even less testing than the originals were. It's just Health Canada thinks, okay, that's fine. And it looks to be just the grossest of rubber stamps possible.
Yes. And that's what's happened with one of the so-called boosters for a new variant of COVID. It's been approved under this emergency use authorization without any human trials this time.
Yeah, that's what I was referring to. Yeah, that's what's happened in Canada as well. That just oh yeah, whatever. It seems to be the the attitude of our health infrastructure in this country.
Yes, and under non-pandemic situations, any kind of injectable product that had the history of this one, with the laboratory animals getting sick and Pfizer covering up trial participant deaths, and cases like Maddie DeGarry, this would have been halted right away.
Yeah, it's despicable and frightening. TJ, we're fast. Tim, we're out of time. It's Dr. TJ Coles. The book is The Pfizer Papers, The Secret Documents Exposing Big Pharma's COVID Vaccine Crimes. How, Tim, do people get a hold of your book?
I believe it's available at places like Barnes & Noble. Mr. Bezos, he doesn't run it now, but the company he used to run can get it from there.
that shall not be named. Yeah, I'm looking at their page right now. It's actually a pretty good page. Okay, well, Tim, thanks a lot, and your many other books. I noticed that this book says it was self-published, as opposed to some of your many other titles: Fire and Fury, Privatized Planet, Voices for Peace, Britain's Secret Wars, Your Brain in Quarantine, Union Jack Boot. You've got a large retinue of books here. Thanks a lot, Tim, for coming on and telling us today about your latest, The Pfizer Papers, The Secret Documents Exposing Big Pharma's COVID Vaccine Crimes.
Thank you.
And I want to also thank Stavrula Patz for coming on. And that's all I've got for this time. Until the next time. Thanks again, Tim.
I heard them marching, chanting, kill them all. I saw millions of people trapped behind ghetto walls. I saw the soldiers shooting every Friday afternoon. I saw some exposed to sickness with others made immune. I saw the tear gas in Al-Aqsa, eyes open wide. I saw the mob attack the motorist and beat him till he died. I heard the generals lying. I saw the tanks moving in. I heard the settlers shouting, let the killing begin. Look up above, hear the ear-splitting sound. Watch the buildings crumble to the ground. See the planes in the sky there by the sea, so much like New York City. I heard the wailing voices of the dying and forlorn, of the kids who couldn't get out, and those who weren't warned. I saw all the schools and hospitals in pieces there still from the last time the IOF came to maim and kill. I saw the brave children with piles of rocks facing tanks demolishing city blocks. What's left of the grove but some sap as they try to wipe Palestine off the map. Look up above, hear the ear-splitting sound. Watch the buildings crumble to the ground. See the planes in the sky there by the sea, so much like New York City. I heard the DNC and all the Republicans too pledge allegiance to Netanyahu. I heard the president starting the story with rockets from a ghetto where people live in rubble, starved by an embargo. I saw a whole lot of crocodile tears on display for the zillionth time. I heard politicians say, can both sides please de-escalate? On one side are the occupied, on the other an apartheid state. Look up above, hear the ear-splitting sound. Watch the buildings crumble to the ground. See the planes in the sky there by the sea, so much like New York City. I heard them marching, chanting, kill them all. I saw millions of people trapped behind ghetto walls.
Speak up. Speak up. Speak up. Speak up. Speak up. Volunteering at CJSF 90.1 FM is a great experience and is easy to get started. So I'll tell you a little bit about it in the hope that you reach out. As this station is run almost entirely by volunteers, you have a variety of ways to get active at CJSF. Every department can use a little bit of help. Arts and entertainment. Well, you can write and produce reviews, conduct interviews of local musicians, the music library, acquiring, organizing, reviewing.